The ringing phone seemed to shake the darkened hotel room. I quickly reached for the phone, knocking over a glass and sending my watch to the floor. "Good morning, Mr. Tyler. This is your 8:30 a.m. wake-up call. Thank you for staying at the Capitol Hill Hyatt Regency. Have a great day," the computerized voice said. I noticed a shaft of light coming through the thick curtains as I pulled myself up from the bed and headed toward the bathroom. I picked up the green folder that included the charges for our 3-day stay. Reading material for the plane, I thought. I relieved myself and stumbled back into the still, dim room. "Kyle," I whispered.
"Yeah,"
Kyle mumbled.
"You up? What do you think?"
"Well, I'll take my shower first. What time does your train leave?"
10:30. "What time is it?"
8:30. I returned to the small bathroom, started the shower, and turned on the hot water in the sink. I rummaged through my shaving bag to locate my razor and toothbrush. The large mirror forced a glimpse of my red eyes and the haggard look on my face. Boy, what a weekend. I couldn't believe it was over. When I got back to Atlanta, the first thing I was going to do was sleep. For days. Kyle and I were in Washington, D.C. for the annual Memorial Day weekend, when thousands upon thousands of black gay men convened in the nation's capital in sort of a silent fraternity convention. The parties had been nonstop meeting and greeting. During the day, there were brunches, and in the evening, barbecues and numerous house parties. The Sunday preceding Memorial Day, the attendees had waited hours just to get inside a packed bar called Rails, a massive warehouse located near the Navy Yard that could not accommodate the men who had simply taken over the city. Kyle went to Rails and said it took him 3 hours to get in, but it was worth the wait. I opted for a more elegant affair given by a group called the Men. I told Kyle, "I am going to a party where the men may be a little older, but the majority of them are homeowners and not simply owners of Metro cards." Since I didn't go to gay bars in Atlanta, this weekend played an important part of my social life. It was exciting seeing so many good-looking black men in one place. The only sad part was that the 3-day holiday was so short, and since I was not engaging in sex, I could only look and lust. Still, I met some interesting men, one in particular, an attractive sports lawyer from Philadelphia named Errol, who, when I repeated his name, replied, "Yes, Errol, like in Flynn." Errol was interesting, but we both faced the "you're too nice for me" syndrome, a common syndrome in the black gay community, where nice, good-looking, educated, black, gay, or bisexual men didn't mind being friendly, but would never date each other. The funny thing was, most men would say they didn't like the syndrome, but no one did anything about it. Some traditions were hard to break, thus making it difficult to establish long-lasting relationships that weren't based on sex and penis size. And black women thought they had a tough finding a suitable mate. I quickly showered and threw my clothes into my leather garment bag. I had taken great pains packing for the trip, and now all of my clothes were wrinkled and stained and smelled of my various colognes. My flight to Atlanta was due to leave at 9:45, so I was cutting things close. "Well, buddy, I'm out of here. I'll call you later tonight when I get home," I said. "Have a safe flight, baby. It's been fun, real fun," Kyle said as he positioned himself on the edge of the bed. "Yeah, it has been fun. I don't know why we do this to each other."
"Yeah, me either.
You get on out of here before I get emotional. I'll see you the next time you're in the city. Now, seriously, think about meeting me in L.A. for the 4th of July weekend."
"I will. Hey, you know I love you. Have a safe trip home. Tell Nicole I send my best and to get rid of that white boy," I joked as I gave Kyle a hug.
"I'll make sure I tell her just that," he responded. As I headed out the door, I heard Kyle call my name again.
"Ray?"
"Yeah, Kyle."
"Tell Jared."
I nodded in wordless agreement, and then moved quickly down the hotel hallway to the elevator and rushed through the lobby. The
The doorman, whose face I had grown accustomed to during the weekend, gave me a broad smile and signaled a taxi as I came through the automatic door. "Have a safe trip and come back and see us again," he instructed. "Thanks, I will," I replied, and firmly placed two crumpled dollar bills into his large hands. As he slammed the door to the taxi, he leaned through the front window and told the driver, "National Airport." As the taxi sped away from the hotel and down 14th Street, I enjoyed one last glimpse of the nation's capital. It had been a great weekend, but I was excited about my return home. I hoped Jared would be waiting at the gate when my flight arrived. Knowing him, I was sure he'd be right there. We arrived at the busy National Airport, and after paying the taxi driver, I stopped briefly to enjoy the honey-sweet morning air. It was a clear day. The sky was a cloudless, piercing blue, and I perceived that spring was making its retreat as summer approached. At the gate, I detected trouble. The line was nearly a mile long. At least, it looked like a mile. I checked the monitors and saw that my flight was now leaving almost an hour behind schedule. I overheard people in line talking about weather problems in Cincinnati. I thought about Jared and hoped he'd call the airline before heading out. While I pondered my next move, my eyes began to travel around to the various news and food stands, but I decided to get my shoes shined instead. There were a lot of familiar faces roaming around the airport from the weekend. The place had the look of a large meeting of African-American men, but the majority of these men were members of the Silent Frat.